For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
He's been awesome. He pretty much has revolutionized some of the pitchers in our game, especially the guys that sink the ball, the seam shift. I call him the seam shift god. But, he talked about how when he was in Boston, he always, I was a guy that he was interested in. And then same when he was in San Fran. So he was happy to get me here. And talking with him, he's just really good at understanding, you know, how to fix my pitches when they go awry. He's so good. He sat me down in spring training and we built out like a pitching zone, and he showed me how he wants me to attack hitters and how to make the plate feel really big when you sink it from ball to strike, and then you can cut it from strike to ball. It makes the plate for the hitters feel very large. And that side of the mentality and the trust of, you know, like the pitch selection, I think adds to the, you know, the shape of the pitches and the execution of them.
Great stuff from Eric Fetty on the White Sox senior pitching advisor Brian Bannister and the influence that he's had on a terrific season for Eric Fetty. And now we get a chance to talk to Brian Bannister, who's on Twitter at RealBanny and with us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Brian, how are you? We got you, Brian.
Yeah, are you here?
Yes, indeed.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, great to be here.
We appreciate it. What brought about your epiphany on when you were a player on having to change your approach?
You know, I realized early on that I didn't throw the hardest. My fastball wasn't going to play in the big leagues. It was actually in the Arizona Fall League, and I was watching Mariano Rivera pitch on TV. He only threw one pitch. And was getting everybody out, and I went out the next day in the Arizona Fall League, messed around with a cutter, wasn't getting hitters out prior to that point, threw a couple cutters, got a couple pop-ups, and against the Ryan Howards and Dustin Pedroias of the world, and all of a sudden I'm like, I might be able to pitch in the big leagues with this thing, and ended up, you know, throwing 50% cutters in my big league career, and that was the only reason to me that I pitched in the big leagues.
And you have referred to this, and really you were one of the pioneers of what sounds like such an intuitive concept, min-maxing, which basically means if you have a good pitch that's hard to hit, throw it more often because it's a good pitch and it's hard to hit. And there's no need to necessarily arbitrarily find some sort of balance in a repertoire when I think the extreme example of that was what happened with Rich Hill at a stage of his career when most people thought he'd never pitch again, and he ended up making like $100 million more dollars. What did that example mean for the rest of baseball?
You know, one way to think differently about pitching is to watch it from the side. If you think back to Ted Williams' famous book, The Science of Hitting, he advocated for good hitters swinging uphill because all pitches inevitably come downhill to the plate from the pitcher's release point. Even from submariners, they have to throw it up, but then it eventually comes down. It doesn't come in flat. And so when you think about pitching from the side, from the angles that are being created, and hitters are swinging uphill, as pitchers, we just don't want to throw into the strike zone at the same angles that the hitters are swinging at. We're trying to actually get as far away from that angle as possible. And so Rich Hill's curveball came into the strike zone extremely steep. He had a special talent for spinning the ball, Whereas prior to that, you know, he'd thrown his fastball a lot and hadn't been as successful. So really the concept was try to get as far away from the angle that hitters swing on as possible and throw those pitches as often as possible.
How much time do you need, or did you need, to kind of go through that? Like, how much tape did you watch to say, look, this is the concept. Like, this is my thesis. Now I need to either prove or disprove it. How long did it take you until you felt comfortable that it was a way to go about teaching?
Yeah, baseball is interesting because at different levels of baseball, there's different things that are more important. In the amateur game up through college, it's really, can you throw harder than the pitchers can handle? And so most of the coaches and trainers spend focusing on velocity with those pitchers. And frankly, some kids just grow up faster than others. You get the 6-foot kids in the Little League that pitch all the way through the Little League World Series just because they overwhelm the rest of the hitters physically on the mound. But when you get into the major leagues, you have to be different somehow. And I think that's fundamentally my thesis on helping pitchers become their best and also deciding what pitchers to go out and acquire is you want to find pitchers that are weird somehow, because every hitter in the world, if you put 100 miles an hour on a pitching machine, they can square it up. They're the best hitters in the world for a reason, and they're very good at what they do. You want to change some variable of what the pitcher is doing or what it visually looks like to the hitter, or from a timing perspective with, you know, Clayton Kershaw's hitch in his delivery. You're trying to tweak an element that frustrates the hitters, or when they swing, it's off by a little bit. And that's the difference between, you know, a Garrett Crochet or an Eric Fetty or Thorpe's changeup that allows them to miss bats consistently. And I think you can say the same for pitchers around the major leagues.
I want to take a step back here. We introduced you as the White Sox senior pitching advisor, and we heard from Eric Fetty about his relationship. But a couple of questions here, and I don't mean this glibly, but that's your job title. What do you do on an everyday basis, and why did you want to do it for the Sox?
The easiest way for me to describe what I do, and I've been consistent about this for the last decade, is I use a PGA Tour analogy. I'm not the caddy that's out on the course with the golfer, the way that a pitching coach is in the dugout during a game with the pitchers. I'm the guy on the driving range in between rounds or on off days that's helping refine their swing, or using the TrackMan to help optimize something about their spin or their tilt, or how they can really improve their game in all aspects. So I'm more the behind the scenes guy on the driving range. And then I try to stay out of the way during games. And I've just found that's my sweet spot, because I'm really interested in the research side of baseball. Pitchers trust me. I've developed a reputation over the last decade and been very fortunate to work for some great organizations and really see some pitchers go on and have great success. But I like staying behind the scenes because that's, I think, where I have the best conversations with the pitchers, and it's the opportunity to really take their game to another level.
How easy or how difficult was it for you to convince front offices that this made sense for them to take on?
I can remember sitting down with Mike Hazen, who's now the GM of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and we sat next to the Green Monster at Fenway Park, and I talked for an hour about how I believe this role was not only necessary, but it was going to be prevalent throughout the major leagues in the future. And so this was back in the fall of 2014, and really what came about was eventually, I guess you could call it a director of pitching role. My title has been varied over the years, but it boils down to the same thing, is we're trying to use every resource available to help the pitchers understand how to get the most out of their talent and keep them optimized throughout an entire major league season, which is a really long season. So my title has changed, but my role really hasn't changed, except I'm less of a coach now and more of an advisor, where I kind of shift between departments on a daily basis.
So why the White Sox?
Frankly, you know, my dad pitched for them from 83 through 87. That 83 season is the one he always talks about.
Me too. He's not the those of us those of us summer. Who lived through it, especially that second half, man. Ooh, boy.
Yeah, and I spent my summers. We all lived in Palos Heights, southwest of Chicago, throughout the 80s. So I think back to my childhood, and it was Chicago. It was catching lightning bugs. It was going to Comiskey, and it had the yellow paint on all the railings. And I used to sit there as a kid and pick the paint, and I probably ate too much of it. It was the organ. It was the mascots. I just actually relate to the White Sox. And, you know, having worked for Dave Dombrowski, who worked for the White Sox, and Jerry Reinsdorf, who's been there the entire time, and now circling back with a lot of staff that I've either played with as a player or worked with professionally over the years, it all kind of seemed to come back to the White Sox. And just looking where they are in the standings, look at the hunger the fan base has for them to be a world champion again. I really wanted to come in and see this team succeed and work alongside people that I believe in and get them through to the same level of success that I've been fortunate to have in both Boston with 108 wins in 2018 and San Francisco with 107 wins in 2021.
To go back to your range analogy, are you like Chubbs where you're going to the individual golfer and saying you could be great if you just did this? Or are you letting guys come to you, or do they go through Ethan to get to you to talk about some of this stuff? How does it work?
A big part of one, I'm thankful to have two hands, not a big wooden hand, because I think that would distract from our conversations. Thankfully, there's no alligators in baseball. But I'm a big believer in what I call not ambulance chasing. I don't hunt pitchers down, especially after periods of failure. What I've found over the years is that being patient and being prepared, having the right information to deliver to the pitchers, having the right communication style that's in the format that that pitcher likes to learn in, whether it's auditory, whether it's visual, whether it's kinesthetic, whatever their style is. And I study the pitchers, and generally the best time to present to a pitcher is after a period of failure, ironically, because when he's going well, he really doesn't feel like he needs you, or he doesn't want to listen to something new or try something new because he doesn't want to disrupt his current success. And it's generally after he fails, and not just once, but after two, three bad outings, they will generally start looking around and trying to find somebody that has the solution to why they're struggling. And it's at that point that if you can be prepared and ready to talk, that's when they're most likely to listen. So sometimes you'll have the information they need, whether it's some data has shifted or they could tweak something, but they're really just not ready to hear it. And sometimes you have to wait for a little failure, and that might take 3 weeks or a month. But if you time it right and they come to you, we joke that it's kind of like Inception. If you can present it in a way where the pitcher thinks that it's his idea and he goes out and really succeeds with the information you gave you, and you can just sink back into the shadows, that's the best result for everybody, where the pitcher owns it. He was ready to listen to the idea, and he goes out and it translates to immediate success. That's the best solution. And that's when I've been able to help pitchers the most.
Brian, there's a pitcher that we've talked, under your tutelage, a pitcher that we've talked about a lot. And as we discuss him, I found a newspaper article here that I think is interesting, because in discussing this pitcher, as was written in the Tribune, it said part of his problems in the past, in crucial situations, he tries to blow the ball past hitters, with the end result, more often than not, being a mistake. And here they have the pitching coach complimenting a very strong performance that he had, saying where he didn't overthrow the entire game. He's starting to approach pitching in a different manner, mixing in a breaking ball, changing speeds, and really pitching. This was an article from May 19th, 1986, about Floyd Bannister. And it was about your dad after his knee injury, and how it meant that he couldn't necessarily reach back for low 90s. And I remember this, but the pitcher I'm talking about is Michael Kopech. And about this idea of, here's, I'm going to announce my presence with authority, and here's another one, and here's 100, and here's 101. And now when it starts to go well, it seemed like he had a breakthrough recently. He was like, well, wait a second. It might not have been an ideal location, but just showing some of these different angles was helpful. I love the parallel of these two stories.
And you know, when it comes to Michael, he's tremendously talented physically. But like we talked about earlier, it really comes down to the angles that your pitches are coming into the strike zone. And despite the fact that he throws 100 miles an hour, and I've had many 100-mile-an-hour throwers over the years that I've worked with, the solution for a lot of them, you know, whether it was Camilo Duvall with the Giants, is to actually not overweight your fastball. And you can still believe in it. You still want to throw it with conviction. But if hitters know without a doubt that a fastball is coming, the best hitters in the world will hit it and they will do damage on it. And you have to introduce some doubt into their mind that a fastball is coming. You want to turn it more into a coin flip between a fastball and another pitch. And, you know, 50% fastballs, it's a coin flip. 60% fastballs, it's 3 out of 5. 75% fastballs, it's 3 out of 4. You start giving a major league hitter who's good at hitting fastballs a 3 out of 4 chance of getting a fastball, and all of a sudden, they're going to be geared up. And even if you locate it pretty well, they might get a good swing off on it, and they're very, very good at doing damage on fastballs. So just kind of turning the odds in your favor and introducing doubt into your pitch sequencing can really improve your pitch quality and prevent the hitter from timing up your fastball.
Look, a lot of the people who are listening to the show, they get to kind of talk with us in real time, and there's a couple of them that are like, wow, this guy sounds like a big-time like baseball executive. Are you happy in the pool that you're in, or do you think that – do you even desire it leading to something else?
Yeah, I've been very blessed to have a lot of opportunities over the years. The one thing I've always prioritized was my family, and it's why I've never been in the dugout, even though I've had many, many opportunities to go into the dugout. I know my personality. I know where I add the most value to an organization. And even though it's an unusual role in that I kind of fit in between departments, you can't argue with the success of both the pitchers over the years and the organizations I've been with, winning World Series, winning franchise record number of games for multiple organizations. And so I've passed up some of the more traditional roles in the dugout or in the front office to make sure that I allocated time for my family, because my dad was gone all those years, and it was hard on my mom. And I just wanted to be around a little bit more to see my kids grow up. And so I've sacrificed. I've sacrificed pension. I've sacrificed probably being more in the spotlight in the baseball world. But I still have enjoyed being around and supporting all those people. And I take pride in making everybody around me look as good as possible and really seeing them grow in their roles, whether it's a minor league pitching coach or supporting the major league pitching coach and being his confidant. A lot of people are craving somebody to help them out, but it's hard to find somebody that doesn't want their job. And so the first thing I always do to everybody is tell them, I don't want your job. I'm here to help. I'm here to give you a second opinion, even if you disagree. And I'm here to make you look as good as possible. And I think that support has really helped us win a lot of games over the last decade.
Lastly, Brian, when you look at guys like Thorpe and Cannon and some of the live arms that are here but are still very, very raw, what are we talking about with upside? What are the ceilings for those two guys?
You know, I really look back to the 2005 team because I pitched in the AL Central from 2007 to 2010. So I was around a lot of those guys and that team and that composition. And when you look at it, you know, you had the John Garland types, you had the Mark Burley types, you had power arms. And so you just go back to those teams and trying to figure out what works really well in all our ballpark. And I talk about it all the time behind the scenes, you know, sinker baller types, power lefties. Those are the things the White Sox have really had a lot of success with over the years. And trying to acquire those types, trying to teach that on the player development side of things, because me having been a very homer-prone flyball-type pitcher as a righty in the big leagues, I had a tough time in Chicago, even though I did very well in Kansas City, very well in Detroit, some of the bigger ballparks. My game was just not suited for Chicago. And so making sure that we acquire and develop the types of pitchers that can pitch very well across the 81 games we play in our ballpark. It is very important, and it's just an emphasis of mine throughout the team structure and the player development side.
And those guys fit that? Those two, the names that I mentioned?
Yes, and so, you know, you see Thorpe, really what stands out, the knock was he doesn't have exceptional velocity, but he has a very, very special changeup. And like I mentioned earlier, I look for weird outlier special characteristics in pitchers that can really make it difficult for hitters to square up the baseball. And he's had some great batted ball luck so far, but he's gone out there and given consistent quality starts. And that's what you look for in a young pitcher, is that they can come up and have an impact right away. And they'll take their lumps at times or go through a bad stretch. But you look for them to be able to go and give major league hitters who can hit the best pitchers in the world and face them on a daily basis something unique that they haven't seen before. And, you know, Cannon, he's very similar to a Logan Webb or an Eric Fetty. We really get into the seam orientation and the seam shifting, as we call it, to give him later movement than most pitchers. And he has that capability. So, you know, he's given up runs at times, but he consistently goes deep into games and is efficient with his pitch count. And the hardest thing to find in Major League Baseball right now are starting pitchers that can go 6-7 innings with regularity. And we have a lot of those, and I've been impressed with the young guys that have come up and contributed.
Brian, this was delightful, man. Thank you so much for spending some time with us and talking with the not just the Sox fan who listens, but the baseball fan that listens and learns from what you're trying to do. I hope we get the opportunity to do this again.
Yes, I love the game. My passion always shines through, and glad to jump on with you guys.
This is great. This is the best I've felt as a Sox fan the entire season.
Yeah, but that's the way it is.
This is great. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. Brian Bannister. Wow, that's really cool stuff. And like, all right. Like, there's something about the Sox I really like. Like, those explanations. There were some really complicated things that he was able to explain without jargon. He was able to let you see it, to describe it. And if that's how he talks to pitchers and that's how they can understand how to upset timing, God, wow.
So, a lot of the best leaders of anything are people who do it reluctantly because they know that they've got a different plan and they can see it. And it's like, I'd rather not, but fine. Shout out to him. I'm glad that he's found his niche, and I hope that if that's what he wants, he stays in it. But that is clearly a forward-thinking guy that I would have no problem giving more responsibility to inside of an organization.
I hope the White Sox don't lose him.
I think that, you know, what was cool about it?
About being able to eating the chips.
Yeah, eating paint chips. I think when you hear someone... This is one of those things about the White Sox that is both a positive and a negative. They do want people that want to specifically be with the White Sox. And in a lot of cases, it's a good thing. And I think in Brian's case, like, here's someone who can advocate for White Sox-ness. And I think do it in a way that we rarely hear.
But I'm saying it hits you because that's... For those of us a certain age, that's Floyd Bannister's kid.
Yeah, well, he's a grown man now.
I know,
so
but the fact that
he's in charge of the whole pitching infrastructure of the White Sox now.
But it just feels kind of, like I said, like there hasn't been a lot to really feel good about the White Sox. But if he's helping these guys, if he's really that responsible for what some of the stuff that Eric Fetty has done, if he was the guy that broke through the thick skull of Michael Kopech.
Well, that's still to be determined.
Right? I don't know.
Well, because, yeah. I mean, Kopech didn't have that awakening until 2 weeks ago. And that's why I wanted you to follow up on him, because that's what he was talking about.
All right, we'll talk more about this and continue to react and find out what you thought of that next on The Score.
83.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. Ooh. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBob's.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 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 The
Score. When you get into the major leagues, you have to be different somehow. And I think that's fundamentally my thesis on helping pitchers become their best, and also deciding what pitchers to go out and acquire, is you want to find pitchers that are weird somehow. Because every hitter in the world, if you put 100 miles an hour on a pitching machine, they can square it up. They're the best hitters in the world for a reason, and they're very good at what they do. You want to change some variable of what about what the pitcher is doing, or what it visually looks like to the hitter, or from a timing perspective.
That is Brian Bannister, for now the White Sox senior pitching advisor. I hope there are bigger things in store for him. Can I just give a sampling?
If he wants.
Right.
Like, if he wants there to be bigger things, he might be cool with just being in his cave.
Can I give you a sampling of texts here that were coming in throughout the interview and
sure.
after? Just because this was, it's rare that we get stuff like this. Just says, terrific interview, really fun. Brian Bannister was great. I says, honestly, I'm not trying to be ridiculous, but I listen to The Score way too much, and this is one of the better interviews I can remember. He said, I have to like the Sox today. That's from Frank. 847 says, Bannister makes too much sense. He won't be here long. 630, that was the smartest White Sox person I have ever heard on your airwaves. 630, gotta say, refreshing to hear such a non-White Sox sounding person in the White Sox organization. Super sharp. They better treat him right. 708 says, uh-oh, this guy is likable, and he works for the Sox. I don't know how to feel. The 773 says, the Sox should give this guy the keys.
Well, the person who hired him has the keys, or at least theoretically has the keys. So if you wanted to take this and make a larger, more positive thing out of it, you could say, if Chris gets hire this guy, then maybe he has a lot better ideas about baseball than you think.
If it's his hire, it's a feather in his cap. If he said this is somebody,
you don't think La Russa hired him, do you?
No.
There you go.
He represents everything La Russa's against.
Right. So let's give Chris Getz,
is that really a question?
Full credit. Let's not half step this. He hired this guy. So you give him credit for that.
He hired Josh Barfield on the hitting side, and he hired Bannister. So this is a positive on the Chris Getz ledger.
Hell yeah.
Although Tony La Russa would have been the manager when he was around the team, because Brian Bannister's dad was on the team.
True.
Just saying.
But it's pretty clear when you listen to him talk that he sees the game differently than at least what we know of Tony in the last few years.
Agreed.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I love the stories that are and you know, Terry and I talked about this when there were Fangraphs articles about Brian Bannister on the Royals, and how where all the players were saying, I don't need any of these analytics stuff. I just tell them, give me the ball and I'll read. He was into everything. He's like, yeah, show me everything. I want to know all about it. I want everything that can be tracked. I want to know it. Everything that can be measured, I want to know it. And when he and Greinke would screw around with all sorts of projects together, because I guess Bannister himself realized, look, Greinke's special. He's way more talented than I am.
He's got a special pitch to you can start doing this and all that talent.
And at one point, he and Greinke had like a bet going, like who could throw a curveball slower, like an actual curveball, not an Ephus pitch.
Me.
But who could throw an actual spinning curveball? as slow as possible with the proper arm speed.
That's probably me.
But you had a slow curve. That's good.
Yeah.
A slow curve is really good.
It was the only, I had a straight ball, a changeup.
And a cutter. I've seen your cutter.
A little bit of a cutter, but the slow curve, once my arm would get tired, that was my favorite time to throw it. Sure, I couldn't throw for a week after that, but it was effective when it needed effective.
Then we got to set you up with the Grandy Man and get you in the pro wiffle ball league.
No, I don't want to do that. Every time I see videos of that, I'm like, oh no, like, because you talk about ass out, like that's what you are, like as a hitter, you're ass out trying to hit the wiffle ball. Those guys are doing.
Because actually last night, Boog used the term sword, and he said to Lester, like, did you guys ever use that term? He's like, no. Come on.
Did he say sword or did he say sword?
No, he said sword, meaning when it, you know how pitching ninja. Yeah, you get a lot of those. But see, the problem with wiffle ball pitching is because the ball's so light, you don't get any resist. It's like all into your arm. Like you really want to wreck your arm.
Yeah, I don't want to do that ever. But I did enjoy going to the batting cage, and I was impressed with myself in the batting cage. And that's saying something. I was like, there's no way. There's no, because
it's a good feeling to square a couple up every once in a while.
Well, I mean, a whole two rounds I squared up. I mean, I hit two hard, but my brother, I was talking to him because, you know, he went into music. I kind of went into sports. And I said, do you want to see what this is like? And he was like, yeah. So I was like, do you want to try and swing? Or he's like, no, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm just here. So I said, just go in there. Don't even take the bat because you'll be tempted. And just stand in the left-handed batter's box. He came out of there after the 12 pitches or whatever and was like, nah, I'm good. I'm good on all of that. And I went in there and started hitting the ball. It was a nice feeling.
Different energy system, too. Like, if your body's not used to, like, that many, like, explosive movements in a short period of time, you can get out of breath real fast.
Well, you know, I think the thing, when I went back and thought about it, I think my golf game has helped me swing the bat, strangely enough.
You're a good enough athlete, sure. If you're the core strength, the turning, timing it up.
I missed out. I was going to do like a dawn 9-hole at South Shore Friday. And then I was like, you know what's good? Sleep. Sleep is pretty good.
Sleep's good.
So look, if you're a White Sox fan, that should feel good. And as we say, and we've been lucky. We've gotten two White Sox on the show.
And both have been awesome.
And this is what I keep trying to tell the people over at the White Sox. Put your people on the air.
And notice what he said about power lefties in that park. About right-handed sinker ballers and power lefties. What was their first round pick?
A power lefty. Yeah. Put your smart people on the air.
Not the dumb ones?
Put the smart.
Oh, the smart ones, yes.
And to be fair to the previous regime, there was never an interview that Rick did on The Score where people didn't walk away and go, I like that guy.
Yeah, because Rick's likable.
And smart.
Yes. Sometimes he gets in a bad mood on certain days, but he'll tell you he's in a bad mood.
Yeah, and then he'd laugh about that too. And if anyone ever had, I mean, I had a lot of interactions with Kenny. Some of them not as pleasant as others, but you'd walk away from Kenny being like, oh, I like that guy too. So there are plenty of likable people that have been at the White Sox. Now it's a matter of, can you effectively do your job? And hopefully Brian Bannister can do that. And listening to him, I have a lot of faith that his suggestions are going to be good ones. Whether they pan out, we shall see. Whether the White Sox as an organization continue to listen to him, we shall see. But it should make any White Sox fan feel better. Listening to him talk about pitching and what his idea is on rebuilding the White Sox as a franchise from a pitching standpoint. And to be fair, the White Sox starting pitching this year has been good and fun to watch. The rest of it, not so much.
Got to get back to the Bears next, and somebody who should be an important part of a defensive line that in some ways may still be in flux. You've got a veteran opposite a star who is not going to give up his position without a fight. That's next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Fight, 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 fight.
We are told the Bears' first padded practice is going to be Friday. So if you got tickets to that practice, it seems like you're going to see some, and more importantly, hear. Because there's just nothing like some of those sounds. And I don't mean the shells. I don't mean the thuds. I mean helmets and pads on a practice field and to hear what it sounds like when these giant people are running into each other.
And occasionally when you can hear how strong a quarterback's arm is.
Oh, hear the ball whistling through the air?
Hear the ball whistle. Like, whoa. All right. Well, got something going on.
And there's been some sandpaper out there with the offense and the defense getting at it. And I think there's a guy that we just haven't really talked a lot about who I think if the Bears are going to be really good, either his game has to improve significantly or he's going to get beat out by somebody who's been more productive. But that's neither here nor there, because DeMarcus Walker says he likes the fact that the offense has been chirping at this confident defense.
We always hear you jump back and forth with the offense. Did you kind of get the reaction today that you've been looking for over the past couple of years?
Yes, I did. You know what I'm saying? Yes, I did. You know, because they had a little brother, you know what I'm saying? And then you picking on them, you want them to swing back, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I do that. And that's the thing about my leadership. You know, I try to get to know the offense and special teams as well. You know what I'm saying? I'm a team leader, not just a leader. You know what I'm saying? To, you know, being able to, you know, get to those moments, you know, being their brother, you know what I'm saying? And also being there, you know, being a bully, knowing how to, like, you know, get to know them. And when you're doing all that stuff, when things hit the fan, you know what type of person you're going to get out of them. You know what I'm saying? So bullying works.
On the football field, right? He didn't
say that it only works on the football field.
No, he didn't.
Very quiet about all that. It would be great if he could get back to where he was in 2022.
Yep.
Very effective player.
Would he have 7 sacks that year? That's the number for him. He had 3.5 last year. If he's a rotational end.
I think that's what he is.
I mean, even as if he plays an entire season, plays 17 games, I don't think 7 is unreasonable.
No, I don't either. But the Bears still are in really good cap shape. So it gives them the opportunity to, if there is a veteran pass rusher who gets cut because he makes too much money, or a someone who's a project that hasn't really been given an opportunity at the defensive end spot that ends up getting cut.
Yeah, they're so thin at the position.
They're very thin.
Listen to their backups, okay? Because right now your starting ends are Walker and Montez Sweat, okay?
Fine. Because you have an elite one on one side and a guy that's okay on the other.
So your backup at left is an undrafted free agent named Jacob Martin. Your backup on the right is still Dominique Robinson.
Yep.
Who's been bad.
Yep.
Bad. And behind them, you've got Khalid Kareem, Jamri Croma, and the other rookie, Austin Booker.
They do have high hopes for.
I will express a different hope. Rather than finding somebody off of another roster, ideally, one of these guys, maybe the light goes on for Dominique Robinson. He doesn't get caught ball watching, and he can use his remarkable quickness and athleticism in a way that translates speed to power, in a way that keeps his pad level down, in a way that just has him looking like a professional defensive end, which so far it hasn't.
I feel like with the opportunities that were available to him, if that was a thing, it probably would have happened by now.
Yeah, I think he's a candidate to get cut. But Austin Booker, now if the story is one of your guys, especially one of your draft picks, is, boy, we can't keep this guy off the field. Great. Awesome. Yeah, find the Mark Anderson.
That would be fantastic to find that. But I would be shocked if the Bears don't bring in more competition at defensive end spot in the next month. I'd be shocked. Because they've got money to burn.
We know it's not Yannick Ngakoue. But if they could find like a better version of one of those veteran one-trick ponies,
why not? Do it and test it out and see. And Booker was the kid that everyone thought that had he gone back to school, right? I'm getting that right? That he had gone back to school, he'd been a second-round pick. So if you're jumping ahead and you feel like we've got really good coaching here that can get him to where he's supposed to be, great. But they do need it. Like, as much of a difference as Montez Sweat made, and he made a huge difference, you still had the lowest or one of the lowest sack totals in football. That guy walked here midway through the season, ended up with the most sacks on your team, and that number was still 6. So they're going to need to make it work because that defensive backfield, I think that if you go Sweat, the linebackers, the back 5, that's a really good group. But what you don't know is...
is Jervon Dexter ready to take the next step, and or Zach Pickens? Is somebody going to be an interior presence?
Yep. That would be nice.
And who's on the other edge? What kind of push are you getting from the other edge?
And it should be easier. You should be seeing a lot of singles because of Sweat and hopefully because of Dexter. I had a conversation with Emma, and he's pretty high on Dexter. And he thinks that the experience last year and the traits, like he keeps looking at him as a trait. Like the traits on that guy would allow you to believe if you wanted that. And the way, honestly, like the way he played in the second half of the season, too. I thought Dexter took some steps forward.
Don't let Chris Emma steal my Jervon Dexter thing. It's my guy. My guy.
He's stealing your comedy bits?
Steal my bit. Dexter talked today, by the way, so we'll have some of that tomorrow.
And he looks great. He looks really trim.
Lean, yeah.
Really toned.
Yeah. Yeah, Emma's doing a great job of lifting.
Next up, a guy you've been wanting to talk to for a while, a great baseball mind, SiriusXM MLB Network Radio play-by-play man and host Mike Farron is going to join us. We can talk trade deadline, Cubs, Sox.
Whatever you want.
Whatever you want. He's got it for you on the score.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Bait, 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 bait.
We are told the Bears' first padded practice is going to be Friday. So if you got tickets to that practice, it seems like you're going to see some, and more importantly, hear. Because there's just nothing like some of those sounds. And I don't mean the shells. I don't mean the thuds. I mean helmets and pads on a practice field and to hear what it sounds like when these giant people are running into each other.
And occasionally when you can hear how strong a quarterback's arm is.
Oh, hear the ball whistling through the air?
Hear the ball whistle. Like, whoa, All right.
Well,
got something going on.
And there's been some sandpaper out there with the offense and the defense getting at it. And I think there's a guy that we just haven't really talked a lot about who I think if the Bears are going to be really good, either his game has to improve significantly or he's going to get beat out by somebody who's been more productive. But that's neither here nor there, because DeMarcus Walker says he likes the fact that the offense has been chirping at this confident defense.
We always hear you jump back and forth with the offense. Did you kind of get the reaction today that you've been looking for over the past couple of years?
Damn right.
Started jawing back a little
bit? Yes, I did. You know what I'm saying? Yes, I did. You know, because they had a little brother. You know what I'm saying? And then you picking on me. You want them to swing back. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I do that. And that's the thing about my leadership. You know, I try to get to know the offense and special teams as well. You know what I'm saying? I'm a team leader, not just a leader. You know what I'm saying? To, you know, being able to, you know, get to those moments, you know, being their brother, you know what I'm saying? And also being there, you know, being a bully, knowing how to, like, you know, get to know them. And when you're doing all that stuff, when things hit the fan, you know what type of person you're going to get out of them. You know what I'm saying? So bullying works.
On the football field, right?
He didn't say that it only works on the football field.
No, he didn't.
Very quiet about all that. It would be great if he could get back to where he was in 2022.
Yep.
Very effective player.
He had 7 sacks that year. That's the number for him. He had 3.5 last year. If he's a rotational end.
I think that's what he is.
I mean, even as if he plays an entire season, plays 17 games, I don't think 7 is unreasonable.
No, I don't either. But I the Bears still are in really good cap shape. So it gives them the opportunity to, if there is a veteran pass rusher who gets cut because he makes too much money, or someone who's a project that hasn't really been given an opportunity at the defensive end spot that ends up getting cut.
Yeah, they're so thin at the position.
They're very thin.
Listen to their backups, okay? Because right now your starting ends are Walker and Montez Sweat, okay?
Fine. Because you have an elite one on one side and a guy that's okay on the other.
So your backup at left is an undrafted free agent named Jacob Martin. Your backup on the right is still Dominique Robinson.
Yep.
Who's been bad.
Yep.
Bad. And behind them, you've got Khalid Kareem, Jamri Croma, and the other rookie, Austin Booker.
They do have high hopes for.
I will express a different hope. Rather than finding somebody off of another roster, ideally, one of these guys, maybe the light goes on for Dominique Robinson. He doesn't get caught ball watching, and he can use his remarkable quickness and athleticism in a way that translates speed to power, in a way that keeps his pad level down, in a way that just has him looking like a professional defensive end, which so far it hasn't.
I feel like with the opportunities that were available to him, if that was a thing, it probably would have happened by now.
Yeah, I think he's a candidate to get cut. But Austin Booker, now if the story is one of your guys, especially one of your draft picks, is, boy, we can't keep this guy off the field. Great. Awesome. Yeah, find the Mark Anderson.
That would be fantastic to find that. But I would be shocked if the Bears don't bring in more competition at defensive end spot in the next month. I'd be shocked. Because they've got money to burn.
We know it's not Yannick Ngakoue. But if they could find like a better version of one of those veteran one-trick ponies,
why not? Do it and test it out and see. And Booker was the kid that everyone thought that had he gone back to school, right? I'm getting that right? That he had gone back to school, he'd been a second-round pick. So if you're jumping ahead and you feel like we've got really good coaching here that can get him to where he's supposed to be, great. But they do need it. Like, as much of a difference as Montez Sweat made, and he made a huge difference, you still had what, the lowest or one of the lowest sack totals in football. That guy walked here midway through the season, ended up with the most sacks on your team, and that number was still six. So they're going to need to make it work because that defensive backfield, I think that if you go Sweat, the linebackers, the back five, that's a really good group. But what you don't know is...
Is Jervon Dexter ready to take the next step and or Zach Pickens? Is somebody going to be an interior presence?
Yep. That would be nice.
And who's on the other edge? What kind of push are you getting from the other edge?
And it should be easier. You should be seeing a lot of singles because of Sweat and hopefully because of Dexter. I had a conversation with Emma, and he's pretty high on Dexter. And he thinks that the experience last year and the traits, like he keeps looking at him as a trait. Like the traits on that guy would allow you to believe if you wanted that. And the way, honestly, like the way he played in the second half of the season, too. I thought Dexter took some steps forward.
Don't let Chris Emma steal my Jervon Dexter thing. It's my guy. My guy.
He's stealing your comedy bits?
Steal my bit. Dexter talked today, by the way, so we'll have some of that tomorrow.
And he looks great. He looks really trim.
Lean, yeah.
Really toned.
Yeah. Yeah, Emma's doing a great job of lifting.
Next up, a guy you've been wanting to talk to for a while, a great baseball mind, SiriusXM MLB Network Radio play-by-play man and host Mike Farron is going to join us. We can talk trade deadline, Cubs, Sox.
Whatever you want.
Whatever you want. He's got it for you on the score.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at MyBob's.com to play now.